We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow, and we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to a Week 11 preview edition of the RotoWire College Football Podcast. Donnie Avery of College Football Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by RotoWire College Football maestro, guru, etc., John McKechnie. Jonathan, going to need you to pick me up a little bit. We're about 3 minutes removed from Odell Beckham officially announcing that he will not be signing with the Green Bay Packers. And as most of the listeners know, I'm a Jaguars fan first. I always will be. It's in my blood. But I've become more and more of a Packers fan being from Green Bay these last few years. This one hurts. I mean, we know better than to get our hopes up for things like this. But man, for him, like it wouldn't have been nearly as painful if Beckham went to a team like the Saints, which to me like aren't really a threat. But for him to go to the team that is operating, the Rams are operating how every fan wants their team to operate, right? And especially a team like the Packers, who have been so conservative, have been completely the opposite for the last decade. To see him load up there, I mean, this feels like, you know, DeMarcus Cousins going to the Warriors, or you know, the way that the Nets team are built. Like, it's not the same in the NFL. You know, like you can stack a bunch of great players, you know, on both sides of the ball, and you're still not like a lock to win it in the same way that you are in another sport. But man, this is tough.
It's amazing the way that the Rams are able to just kind of, they've identified that the draft is a crapshoot, and no one else seems to pick up on that. Everyone just kind of thinks that their scouting department is going to get it right. And what the Rams do is they're just like, well, you want a first rounder? Like, dangle it out there, and then they end up getting a guy who's already proven that he's good in the end. You know, it's like the classic bit from Family Guy. It's like, you can have a boat or what's in the mystery box. It's like, oh, you know, I should probably take the boat. But what if a boat's in the mystery box? You know, so so
exactly.
It's amazing the way the Rams have been able to work this out, and they've been on this trajectory for a few years now, dating back to, you know, the Jalen Ramsey move. They obviously got Vaughn the other week. So yeah, they're loading up. I feel like Odell would have been a more impactful guy on the Packers just because Davante Adams is such like the option 1A, 1B, 1C for the Packers that, you know, he would have been such a better second guy than, you know, hoping for a good week at Alan Lazard or MVS. But I digress. We'll see how this Rams super team experiment works. And to do a quick callback to, you know, our seasons past, when we used to be sponsored by many great brands, I found something at the checkout counter at the grocery store by me the other day, and it was Alpha Brain drink powder. So I hucked one of those down, but before we sat down. So I'm more than ready to pick you up here, pal.
All right. Well, you're gonna have to pick my Beta Brain up. I have not taken any Alpha Brain, if you can't tell. But
I have the brain of a gorilla right now.
Yeah, man, it's tough. It's tough. I'll be in the house at Lambeau in a couple of weeks when the Rams play at Green Bay. I was really hoping that would be like Odell's second game in a Packers uniform. Instead, he'll be playing for the other team. So that makes it just all the more sweet, I guess. But let's get into week 11 already in the college football season. As we talked about on our recap show earlier this week on Monday, we looked ahead a little bit, and I would say this is another good, not great week. Some really intriguing ranked versus ranked matchups. There's a couple ranked versus ranks where you're like, I can't believe either of these teams are ranked right now. But I want to kind of go through and highlight all the big games. We got a lot of Big Ten action. We got some really nice Big 12 action in the early window. The Dogs are in action. They're at Tennessee this weekend. Purdue back in the top 25. Another chance to slay another giant at Ohio State. Where do you want to begin this week, John?
Let's start with that early window of games. Yeah, there's a lot. The Big Ten, once again, kind of like the center of the college football universe. Big noon Saturday coming up with Penn State going up against Michigan. And Michigan just 1.5-point favorites on the road in that one. And Michigan, they got out of the Indiana game with the win, a pretty convincing win, but there were some bumps and bruises along the way. And I just wonder how much that factors in this week. And I think to most casuals, you see that Michigan and Penn State are playing in a given week or coming up this week. And you'd expect the number six team to be giving a few more points than just 1.5. So that goes to show you that Vegas anticipates Penn State to be a pretty tough task for Penn State. And I'm really interested to see how this plays out, especially if Michigan is a little bit shorthanded, because we've seen in the past where Michigan, like against Michigan State, they went against type. They went after the Michigan State secondary in a way that we hadn't really seen Michigan do at all this year. If Penn State's able to slow that Michigan ground game, I think that they have a secondary that McNamara won't be able to throw on with as much ease as he did against Sparty. So that this actually sets up to be a pretty tough matchup for Michigan here. And we know Harbaugh's record against ranked teams, and you double down with this one being a road game in Happy Valley, even though it's noon. I got to imagine it's going to be a crazy atmosphere there.
I did read this week, with this game being at Penn State, Harbaugh said that he just imagines that everybody's cheering for him. So actually, maybe not really a road game for Michigan. If you can just pretend that everybody's cheering for you, then you feel like you're at home, I guess.
That's the incredible type of mental gymnastics that really only Harbaugh could come up with.
Yeah, kind of a sick idea, actually. I mean, if you can somehow convince yourself, then every game's a home game. You're never truly on the road. So we have Michigan, Penn State in the early window. We have number 8 Oklahoma at number 13 Baylor, also in the early window. Really the first true test, I guess, for Oklahoma, which has played, I don't even think, a top 100 schedule to date. If they are in the top 100, they're barely in after last week. But obviously things pick up for them, kind of a backloaded schedule for the Sooners. They play at Baylor this week. They're home for Iowa State next week. And then the week after, they finish out at Oklahoma State, which is currently ranked 10th in the college football playoff rankings. Looking at this one from a gambling perspective, over under 62 points, Oklahoma. Again, this is on the road at Waco, 5.5-point favorites.
Right. This is a really interesting setup. I think it's interesting that we touched on it briefly on Monday's show, but Baylor, other than Michigan State, had been kind of singled out as the team that was going to get upset last week. And it was against a TCU team that was falling apart. They just had to fire the kind of program building coach in Gary Patterson earlier that week. And they come out with a backup quarterback and they beat Baylor. And yet Baylor's ranking didn't really suffer that much from that, which I'm kind of surprised by. And then, of course, the committee stands pat with keeping Oklahoma at 8. They're coming off the bye, so that's pretty understandable, I would say. But yeah, this, even with Baylor dropping that game and even with Oklahoma coming off the bye, this is a really, really tricky test for Oklahoma. I mean, Baylor can really run the ball. We've seen that time and time again. Gary Bohannon, a pretty solid quarterback. I'd say a couple cuts above like a game manager type of quarterback. And then Oklahoma, we've seen them play great under Caleb Williams. We've also seen them sleepwalk against Kansas. You don't think that the sleepwalk factor is going to happen here, but 5.5, that's a tricky line there. And I could definitely see Baylor covering this one. I know that Bill Connolly's SP Plus actually has Baylor playing them really close with inside a field goal. And I think that he has a pretty good read on both of these teams here. So I actually think that Baylor finds a way to cover this one. I think it's going to be really close.
Do you like Oklahoma to win outright still?
I do. I just think that they have the edge at quarterback and just overall talent and probably coaching as well. So as long as the run defense for Oklahoma doesn't completely collapse, then Oklahoma ends up getting this game on the road in a tight one.
So we got Mississippi State at Auburn, Northwestern at Wisconsin, also in the 11 a.m. window among ranked games. New Mexico State goes to Tuscaloosa. That line is now up to Alabama minus 51 in a game with a total of 67. So you can kind of do the math there. This one is not lining up to be a banner day for 1-8 New Mexico State going up against the 8-1 Tide. Any other games from that early window before we move to mid-afternoon?
Miss State Auburn should be fascinating. Auburn is a weird team. Miss State, obviously a weird team. We got a situation here where Auburn coming off the kind of reality check loss a week ago at Kyle Field in Miss State. You know, they get the respect from the committee in that initial set of rankings, given that they had, like, I think three ranked wins going into last weekend, but they lose to Arkansas and what was kind of a nutty finish last week. I think that we're going to see Auburn win this one, but I expect a very, very close game. This one, just like the OU game, is just a 5.5-point spread in favor of Auburn. So I like the Tigers here, but Miss State, just that offense, they're never completely out of it. And I'll get to Will Rogers and his road splits a little bit later on in the show, but he can really put on a show on the road. So that's going to be a really fun early game.
I don't have much to say about Wisconsin Northwestern. I will say whenever Wisconsin plays at Northwestern, the games seem to be really weird. You're basically playing in like a field of weeds that's like a foot long. Wisconsin needs the fast track at Camp
Randall. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they get slowed down.
They do. I mean, anybody who's ran, it seems weird, but all that grass, you know, and thousands and millions of blades of grass together, you know, it adds up. But Wisconsin 24.5-point favorites at home. Again, if we were at Northwestern, I would say lock in Northwestern to cover that. But with Wisconsin being at home and starting to look better, I do like the Badgers to win big in this one. Low total, 41 points only. Not a lot of high expectations for the Wildcats in that game. In the afternoon window, we do have a strange 2 p.m. Eastern start. Utah on the road at a lowly Arizona team. Utah 24-point favorites in that one. Georgia's at Tennessee, Purdue's at Ohio State, Minnesota is at Iowa, undefeated UTSA is in action, Maryland goes to Michigan State.
Yeah. I was just making the Roadrunner noise, but didn't come across very well. But yeah, no, we got a nice little afternoon of games here. Touching on Utah quickly, maybe doubling down on my take earlier this week that, you know, that I think that they beat Oregon next week, but Arizona coming off their first win against a COVID decimated Cal team. So I don't know if you slap an asterisk on the win there for Arizona getting their first one. I think I tweeted out on Saturday that the last time that Arizona won, I didn't have a mustache. So it had been a little while. But yeah, Utah rolls in that one. Let's unpack Georgia, Tennessee. And you tell me if I'm just kind of like overthinking everything, but Tennessee, by my estimation, has the best offense that Georgia has played this season. They're really, really up tempo. Hendon Hooker's playing really, really well. They've got a nice crew of receivers, pretty solid group of running backs. In addition to that, I don't expect them to be able to run on Georgia at all, but I expect that tempo and the deep passing attack of Tennessee to potentially give Georgia some trouble that it hadn't seen previously. And kind of like what you were alluding to, as a Wisconsin fan, you kind of have an extra sense for how games go at different places within your division. Mm-hmm. Neyland Stadium has not necessarily been very kind to Georgia over the years. There's been a lot of injuries on Georgia's side. At Tennessee, the 2013 game really rings out to me. But 2015, obviously Nick Chubb's injury in that one. I've seen Chris Conley get hurt there. So I don't know. You build your stadium over something that houses a bunch of dead people. I guess weird stuff happens, but there you go with Tennessee. So am I crazy in thinking that Tennessee keeps this one close, especially with Georgia sort of looking in its own weird way, a little bit unimpressive on offense a week ago, even though they ended up scoring over 40 points, but they couldn't run on a Missouri team that is giving up far and away the most rushing yards in college football.
All right, thoughts on Purdue at Ohio State? Not a lot of respect here from the odds makers, despite Purdue, you know, taking down two really good teams, at least at the time, already this season. But they're back in the top 25. They're at 19 going up against the fourth-ranked Ohio State Buckeyes. Ohio State, 3 touchdown favorites in this one. We got a pretty decent size over-under, 62.5 points. Both teams should be able to move the ball here.
Yes, excited for this one. I can't tell if Purdue being ranked, they'll let it get to their heads again. You know, oh, my God, this is the second time this season they've been ranked after 14 years of being outside the top 25. They obviously do all their giant slaying when they're unranked. But I imagine that Ohio State, for all the hand-wringing that we saw about their performance a week ago in Nebraska, I think that they're going to come out and hang a pretty huge number on Purdue. I think that we're going to see the run game and the passing game get going. You know, Garrett Wilson, if he's back in the mix, that's 3 NFL receivers that Purdue is going to have to defend while also trying to slow down Trevion Henderson. That's just too much, in my opinion. So I think Ohio State wins and covers. I'm hoping for DFS because we're getting a lot of nice discounts on Purdue based on, you know, the spread and the total in this one, that Purdue is able to, you know, at least move up and down the field a little bit here. But I think that, you know, Ohio State gives Purdue a reality check, and we see something not too dissimilar from when Purdue played after its last big upset win.
There's a world in which I could see Purdue covering this and keeping the game within reason. I don't know that they get blown out, but it's almost impossible to imagine them beating a third, you know, top 5 team in what would that be, 5 weeks, 6 weeks? I mean, it depends. Like, which version of AOC are we getting? Are we getting the one who threw for 900 yards and 5 touchdowns against Iowa and Michigan State, or are we getting the one who threw for what, 7 picks against Notre Dame, Illinois, and Wisconsin? I mean, it's been, you know, he's been at his absolute best in those 2 wins against 2 really good teams. And we could quibble about how good Iowa maybe actually is, but I don't really see this one happening again. I think Ohio State probably takes care of business pretty easily.
Yeah. I think you have it right in the sense of, you know, which Aiden O'Connell, which AOC are we going to see on Saturday? And you know, his home road splits, not too dissimilar as far as the yards per attempt or the completion rate goes, actually a little bit better on the road for completion percentage, but at home, 322 yards per game on the road or neutral sites, 199.5. So that's pretty jarring as far as his splits. So even just talking through that, you know, maybe a little bit more worried about David Bell and this Purdue offense overall, if he struggles that much on the road.
Any thoughts on Minnesota, Iowa?
Next to none. Okay. Minnesota, of course, you know, just comes out, lays an egg last week. Iowa takes care of business against Northwestern. I think it's an ugly, close game. I think we see total points scored somewhere under 40. I think it's probably like Iowa 24, Minnesota 14, something like that.
That would be a satisfactory result for me. A&M, Ole Miss. One of the highlights of the late window. This is a 7 p.m. Eastern start on ESPN. A&M, 2.5-point favorites on the road at Ole Miss. How healthy of a Matt Corral are we going to get in this game? I think is question number one. I think I like A&M on the road here. I think I like them to win this game by at least a field goal. Total in this game is set at 57 points right now.
Yeah, so that would seem to favor A&M if the total's low. Like, you don't like A&M in a shootout situation against a team like Ole Miss that can keep scoring, but A&M defense travels, and they obviously don't have a great quarterback situation with Calzada, but he can be a decent little game manager. And I think the way that you can really bludgeon Mississippi is with the ground game, with that combo of Isaiah Spiller and Devin Achane. And I think that they just go to that and just kind of, you know, a poor man's version of what Alabama did to Ole Miss. I expect A&M to have a similar kind of script en route to getting the win on the road here. So I'm with you there. I do like A&M in this matchup, despite it being on the road at night.
We got Notre Dame at Virginia. We got NC State and Wake Forest. This is the one I alluded to as like, okay, both these teams are ranked. Wake Forest is still number 12 in the country. All right. Something crazy has to have happened here. We got Arkansas, LSU. We got TCU, Oklahoma State. We got some late Pac-12 action as well. But let's go to NC State, Wake Forest. Demon Deacons, slight home favorites here. Only 2-point favorites against, again, number 16, NC State. Total in this game is at 66.5. Do you have a lean either way?
I would guess I like Wake Forest to win this one and to cover. I tend to not have a ton of faith in North Carolina State. I do feel like also they are like the least buzzy Power Five program that's ranked right now. Like nobody says, and no one has opinions on North Carolina State. It seems like it's just like,
yeah, myself included.
Yeah, they're solid. They're fine. They can do this. They can do that. But they're really just not all that exciting. They got a tandem of running backs that are pretty good, experienced quarterback play and a good defense. So that, you know, that's kind of the NC State formula, or tends to be. But Wake, I mean, that game was awesome last week against UNC. As long as they're not totally deflated, and also kind of hilarious to see that they're 8-1, but they're 5-0 in the ACC, because that was technically a non-con game last week against North Carolina, which I love that. But as long as they're not demoralized, I'm much more buy in on this Wake Forest team. I mean, they're just so explosive on offense. The receivers, A.T. Perry and Ja'Quari Roberson, both awesome. Sam Hartman playing an extremely high level. I will take Wake coming off the loss.
All right. Always safe going with the home team. I mean, it's just been so hard for me to buy in on Wake Forest again as a legitimate good team, but that's the way that this season has gone. Thoughts on Arkansas, LSU?
You know, Arkansas has a chance to build on its good win a week ago and go into that game against Bama with some serious wind in their sails. But going into Death Valley, even with all the problems that LSU has had throughout the course of this season. And maybe you could argue that they kind of just blew their wad against Bama last week, as far as like the last game that they're really going to get up for this season. But even still, I will defer to LSU, and also that they're kind of wrestling with their own quarterback controversy right now. It doesn't feel like Max Johnson has the full confidence of the program, of the team. And they have a, you know, kind of hotshot five-star freshman waiting in the wings that is supposed to see some playing time here. So I know I've kind of talked on both fronts here, but I'll still side with LSU. Unfortunately, two very fun, likable coaches going in this one, in a nighttime atmosphere, in Baton Rouge. It should be a really fun game to have on Saturday night, but I do think that LSU finds a way.
All right. So what are we thinking for TCU, Oklahoma State, and then in the late window on ESPN, Washington State at Oregon? Either of these teams have any chance of pulling an upset here?
Well, TCU, I mean, a week ago, I would have said no chance, but after the way that Chandler Morris played a week ago in place of Max Duggan, it's like, well, you got to give him a chance. But I do think on balance, Oklahoma State is just such like a solid kind of grind you down team that them being at home at night, it's hard to bet against them. I think TCU, they had their like, you know, one game where they kind of outperformed expectations a week ago. I think they come back to earth and look more like the team that they've been all season this week in a tough road setup.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I don't have too many thoughts on Oregon either. I think next week is going to be much more interesting with that Utah game looming. But they've, like we said on Monday, you know, they've kind of been doing the Oklahoma model of just squeak by, keep winning, and let all the other dominoes ahead of you in the poll just keep falling.
Yeah, that's been their formula, and it's gotten them to number three right now. They still have the best win in the country probably with that game against Ohio State. But, yeah, I haven't been impressed by Oregon in quite some time. So, you know, expect them to win this one ugly And then next week, we'll kind of turn up the heat on the fraud watch for Oregon. And then rounding it out, San Diego State, Nevada. As a noted Mountain West head, I love this game. It's a game of great defense on the San Diego State side versus great offense with Carson Strong and all those guys at Nevada. So I'm really excited for that one as well. But we can touch on that in a second when we get to some games that we like for best bets.
Well, let's get to what all the ladies have been waiting for. John McKechnie's DFS preview of week 11 in college football. And we begin, as always, John, at the quarterback position, unless you have any specific games that you want to talk about first.
Yeah, so this is another fun, interesting slate. Of course, as we know, coming out news earlier this week that USC and Cal are not going to be playing this weekend. That's been postponed. So, you know, all those guys are marked red on DraftKings to let you know that to avoid those guys, as they will not be accruing points this weekend. Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan State, and Ohio State all check in with the highest implied totals, but we aren't seeing quite as many teams with 35 or more implied totals this week. Like last week, there were so many different ways you could have gone about it, and it paid off. You know, if you went cheap and you went with Purdue and Penn State, that got you where you needed to go. But if you loaded up on the Wake UNC game, that worked out too. I don't think that this slate will be as varied as far as its path to getting a high scoring build here. So I'm interested to see how this one plays out. I don't know how much Ohio State I'm going to have, even though they have that implied total of 42. They spread the ball around so much generally. Last week, Jackson Smith and Jigba obviously had the huge game, but you know, I think that comes back to earth a little bit, provided that Garrett Wilson's back. But I like the value at quarterback this week. I've talked about this team many times on the pod this year as one to target, and that's Michigan State's pass defense. So this week, that's Talia Tungavailoa, you know, checking in at 5,900. He's been putting up some pretty serious numbers of late, even despite Dante Demas and Jayshon Jones being sidelined. He's still got Rakeem Jarrett. And again, he's under 6K. I know it's on the road, and that can be tricky. So I'm not going to have like more than 50% exposure to Tungavailoa because we've seen him melt down on the road before. But at the same time, I think that Maryland is decidedly a pass-first team at this point, and Michigan State giving up the amount that they do through the air, I think that's definitely a worthwhile way of saving either at your super flex or at your quarterback spot. I think Hendon Hooker at 6,500 is really interesting too against Georgia. I think that all these Tennessee guys have their price decreased, and understandably so, going up against the number one defense in the country. But
they play in Wisconsin.
But I'll let that slide this time. But
nonetheless,
yeah, Hooker. I mean, when you're getting him at under 7K with the amount of impact that he has on that offense, both like explosive passing production and some rushing production on top of it. And Georgia has shown in the past to not really be all that great against mobile quarterbacks. I mean, even Missouri's mobile quarterbacks were moving around on them a little bit last week. So Hooker at 6,500, I don't think that's a bad idea at all, actually. And then Purdy, 6,800, going to Texas Tech. Texas Tech obviously just hired a new head coach. One of the kind of just least buzzy, like, firings and hirings that I can remember, really. It was just sort of like, oh yeah, that happened. But you know, I think that he's even still worth considering. Iowa State, not really a high passing volume team, but Purdy really, really efficient. So I think he should be able to get it done. And then Will Rogers at 7,400. I've just stopped doubting him as far as what he can do on a week to week basis. He's going to be dropping back and throwing it a ton. And his road splits, pull it up real quick. He's averaging 407 yards on the road this year with a 14-3 touchdown to interception ratio. So compare that to just averaging 335 passing yards in Starkville with a touchdown to interception at 9-5. So he actually plays better on the road, played well last week against Arkansas. I could see him doing that again. there's not like a ton of touchdown upside. You're not expecting him to throw much more than two. But I mean, I think the 300 yard bonus is almost a lock when it comes to Rodgers. So I like him as well. And then a quick shout out, Tyler Van Dyke has kind of come out of nowhere and been someone that kind of has salvaged Miami's season. You're not going to discount on him, unfortunately. He's 8K. Not sure if I'm tailing that one necessarily, but I think that he was worth a mention because Miami had just kind of fallen out of our discourse for a minute. And, you know, he's actually got them back on the map a little bit.
Yeah, three straight 300-yard games, 10-1 TD to INT ratio in that span for Van Dyke. Did come out of nowhere, like you said. Let's look at the running back position. Decent amount of parity at the top. You have Deuce Vaughn, Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, Travion Henderson, a lot of familiar names in action this week. Braylon Allen, just below that group. He's at 8,200, and that rounds out the guys north of 8,000. Do you have a favorite of that group? Are you looking more value at the running back position?
Yeah, so I am paying up at running back this week. And for me, it does start with your guy, the Hoss, Braylon Allen. You know, Northwestern.
Certified Hoss.
Truly. So, I mean, Northwestern is sort of like the Mizzou of the SEC. Before you get angry, any Northwesterner listeners, I'm not comparing them academically, but against the run, very similar in that they are both extremely bad. And even though Mizzou kind of stood up to Georgia's rushing attack last week, Northwestern's did not against Iowa. And I think you could argue that Wisconsin has an even better run game than Iowa does. It's in Madison. I imagine, you know, you'll have to give me the report here, but is it football weather up there yet?
As of today, it is football weather. It was extremely unseasonably warm over the weekend and even into Monday and Tuesday, but things have taken a turn for the worse. And it's not as football weather as it normally would be, but we're definitely getting there. It's going to be the most football weather game of the season by a wide margin.
Okay, that's all I need to know. So I think that the Badger ground game, especially with Ches Malusi being ruled out for the season earlier today, that I think that points to Braylon Allen having like 30 carries on Sunday,
right? I mean,
or Saturday.
No Malusi, that's 15 carries last week, and that's pretty much what it's been week to week. And it's not like it's just going to be Braylon Allen. Wisconsin always has another guy in the holster. But I think, as we said 3-4 weeks ago when it kind of became clear, I forget which game it was. I think it was the Purdue game when he really kind of started to take over. Wisconsin likes to have a guy. You know, occasionally they'll have two or three other guys, you know, who are in the mix. But if, you know, in a year like this where they don't seem to have that many options, they're more than happy to ride one guy. So I would be pretty surprised if, given the opponent and given the situation, we don't see 25 plus carries for Braylon Allen. I mean, he topped out at 20 against Iowa. I would be pretty surprised if he doesn't set a new season high here.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm going to have a hard time making a lineup that I like that doesn't have Braylon Allen this week. And I think, it, you know, again, if you tail the what I'm talking about as far as the value at quarterback this week, you can fit two of these upper echelon receivers into your lineup and not feel too bad about it. So, I mean, Kenneth Walker, I think he's in a totally golden spot against Maryland at home. I see him racking up more than two touchdowns in this one. I think that Michigan State is just going to go to him plenty, especially if Jalen Naylor is unavailable in the passing game. Again, I think that they just kind of dare Maryland to try and stop them on the ground. And I could also see 9,500 Breece Hall being a good play, but that's 9,500. That's a bit different than Kenneth Walker down at 89. So keep that in mind. And then Hassan Haskins could have a really nice path to a lot of carry volume because Blake Corum got hurt last week and they just turned around and gave Haskins over 25 carries. I could see that being the case again this week. It's just a matter of, you know, how much do you trust the Michigan offensive line to generate that push, because it won't be quite as easy going against them as it was against Indiana just a week ago. And then looking elsewhere, There is some value to be had. I was initially upset that this game was even on the slate and that I'm talking about Indiana Rutgers, but Stephen Carr hurt his ankle last week against Michigan, and Chris Childers kind of picked up the rest of the workload. It wasn't much. And, you know, he just had 11 carries for 34 and a touchdown. But if he's the bell cow against Rutgers, that should bode well. And he's priced pretty far down, so you don't have to really pay up for what could potentially be a starting guy against Rutgers at home. So $4,500 is his salary. Rutgers bad against the run. So keep an eye there as kind of like a GPP pivot if you're keeping an eye on the injury status of Stephen Carr. I think that's my one sort of like further down the board that I could definitely see paying off type of play at the running back spot.
And we shift to the wide receiver position. Two guys in the 8K or above range. That's Charleston Rambo. He's right at 8K. And Jahan Dotson, unsurprisingly, the highest priced option on the slate going up against Michigan. He, of course, coming off of an 11 reception, 242 yard, 3-touchdown game. If you're scoring at home, that accounts to 56.2 DraftKings points, almost double what he put up in any other game this season. And he's had some pretty monster games, but a slightly better test against this Michigan defense as opposed to Maryland. I think that's being kind. That's one way to say it. I noticed David Bell's all the way down at 6,700. I get it. You know, it's a tough Ohio State defense. He struggled a little bit against some of their more difficult opponents, but he had huge games against Iowa and Michigan State, 200 plus yards, 11 catches in each of those games, had 44 and 42 DraftKings points. So if you think Purdue has any chance to hang around here, you know, studies suggest that David Bell is going to be a big reason why.
Yeah, he's a beast. There's really no way around it. And yeah, you are getting him at a discount. I do have a level of concern when it comes to O'Connell falling apart, and it, you know, mentioned his splits a few minutes ago, but Bell is kind of like that transcendent talent. So getting him at a discount, even though you're not expecting quite another performance like he had a week ago, I could definitely still see him returning value. The bar is a little bit lower for him to clear this week. And yeah, when it comes to Dotson, we obviously talked about him last week, loved that matchup, loved the Penn State passing game there. And he just completely eviscerated Maryland in that respect. And they knew the ball was going his way pretty much every time. They still couldn't stop him. I'm not paying up for Charleston Rambo at 8K. I know he's been coming on strong lately, and obviously Van Dyke as well. So I guess the thing I could say for doing a Miami stack is not a lot of people are going to be on it. I highly doubt that's going to be the popular stack. So I think you can separate yourself from the field, especially if you're convinced that Miami is going to be able to take care of Florida State on the road, which they might be. I certainly wouldn't have said that a few weeks ago, but they've really kind of turned a corner a little bit. But I was talking about Talia Tungavailoa earlier on in the show. If you want to pair him up with somebody, I always like Rakeem Jarrett. He's 4,500. Sees the bulk of the targets among their receivers. The tight end Okonkwo last week had like 15 targets. I imagine that's going to kind of mark his like spike week of the entire season. I don't see him getting 15 targets again against Michigan State. But if you wanted to go on the other side of that game, get a bit of that Michigan State passing game, then Jaden Reed obviously makes plenty of sense for you at 6,100. As well. Some other receivers that I like, going back to that Rutgers Indiana game, Bo Melton constantly seeing double digit targets when he's healthy. I could see him pushing for those double digit targets once again against the Hoosiers. So I like him. On the other side of the Miami Florida State game, Keyshawn Helton, 4,300 against Miami. Not really counting on a ton of volume, but he is explosive. That guy is super fast. Only needs one big play to really make it happen for you. So as long as Jordan Travis is back under center for Florida State, I think Helton has a chance to at least return some value. And then dovetailing off the Hendon Hooker Tennessee play, I think Javonte Payton's the one that I would go with among those Tennessee receivers. Obviously, like Velus Jones is a guy who sees a fair bit more targets than him. Payton really not seeing all that many targets, just like 4.7 per game, as opposed to Tillman seeing 8.3 and Velus Jones with 6. But Payton is their shot play guy. And I think if Tennessee tries a shot play, which I believe they will this week, try to be a little bit aggressive against the number one team in the country, I think Payton's going to be the one. And we'll see if Georgia's corners are game for it. But you're getting a discount on all these Tennessee guys. And I'm very interested to see what Payton's able to do here.
All right, looking forward to another fantastic week in college football. What's your setup this week? Are you going to be locked in? I assume you're on the clock this week. But where's your attention going to be in the early window? How many TVs are going to be fired up? Are we going to be tripping breakers at the McKechnie apartment complex?
So hopefully, you know, the power stays true here. But yeah, going to have the two TVs set up. I think we'll give Big Noon Saturday it's the respect it deserves and go with the Michigan Penn State on the big guy starting us out, and then Oklahoma Baylor on the second TV, and then obviously it'll be Georgia plus whatever DFS game I have deemed worthy of my attention in the second window, and then later on I believe I actually get to have fun on Saturday night this week, so it will just depend on whatever establishment I end at, but yeah, looking forward to that. It should be loaded. If I could quickly fire off a few bets that I like this week before we roll. Western Kentucky, -18 at Rice. Go Tops. Offense too explosive. Tennessee, +20.5. I think that they keep it respectable in this one. South Carolina, +1 at Missouri. Missouri just covered their first spread of the season. It only took them 38.5 points or whatever to find that cover, but they sure did. I think South Carolina might have found something. They had two guys go over 100 yards on the ground last week against Florida. Missouri, terrible against the run, so I like that. I like San Diego State, -2.5 against Nevada. Unfortunately, I like Nevada, but San Diego State's just so tough. And then if Brennan Armstrong plays, UVA +5.5 against Notre Dame.
All right. I like Penn State to win outright at home against Michigan. As I said before, I like UW to cover 24.5 against Northwestern. I'm taking the Sooners. Cover 5.5 on the road at Baylor. Arkansas, LSU under 59 points. And I like A&M to cover that 2.5 at Ole Miss. Again, Matt Corral, a little bit banged up. You know, Ole Miss can move the ball, but I think in terms of both offensive and defensive line, A&M still has a pretty major advantage there. And if Matt Corral is not at 100%, that's what tips the scales for me.
Yeah, I like those calls. Yeah, I might have to tail you on the A&M one. I think that the formula sets up nicely for them in this one. Do you have a good setup for this weekend? Any weddings?
Well, boy, I do have another wedding. Let me tell you.
Tell your friends to stop falling in love and, you know, getting their lives figured out.
It's disgusting. I know, right? This will be the fourth wedding that I've been in my life, and both all four of them have been back to back. So like last year or 2 years ago now, I guess they were back to back weekends, of course, during college football season. And now here we are again. So the nice thing is my buddy who's getting married this weekend he's up there in terms of like all time sports fan friends. So, you know, there won't be any concerns about, you know, pulling the phone out to stream a game or anything like that. There's been talk of, you know, discussing with the venue the potential for wheeling in a TV or two, but should at least be able to catch the early window before things really kick into high gear at night. But it's gonna be another, you know, early Sunday morning of me watching a lot of highlights, watching a lot of condensed games, and unfortunately not you know, spending 12 straight hours sitting in front of my TV.
Testing the bandwidth of your cell provider yet again. Public enemy number one out there.
It's like the router's just smoking like crazy.
It's wailing again.
He's hogging all the bandwidth. Oh, man. All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. All right. Cheers.